I'm Kier from Gallifrey Public Radio, a Doctor Who fandom podcast and part of the Gunna Geek Network, just like the show you're checking out now. Shows in the network are individually owned, and opinions expressed may not reflect others. Find other interesting geeky shows at GunnaGeekNetwork.com.
You are listening to PopX Cast, where science fiction meets pop culture.
Captain's Log Supplemental.
PopX Cast.
Hasta la vista, baby.
Hey guys, welcome to PopX Cast, where science fiction meets pop culture. I am Austin Burke, joined by Lindsay Badger. Joseph is coming in here in just a second. Lindsay, how have you been? The team is back together.
It's two episodes in a row. Can you even imagine it to be ever happening again?
Yeah, and I'm so excited for today's topic. Joseph, he's here, the host that knows the most. How you doing today, man?
I can show you the world. Shining, shimmering, splendid. No, I'm actually doing really well, man. Thank you so much. And Austin Burke, right before we even dial into tonight's PopX episode number 92, sir, 25,000 subs almost? What?
Almost. If you haven't subscribed to his channel, we need to like drop a link in the chat real quick, and we're going to make this happen because... Yeah.
Dude, I'm just like sitting here. I'm looking at your feed. Dude, let me just brag on you for a second. You are cranking it out like a beast right now. Dude, it's like where does he get the time to watch all of this stuff, you know?
Dude, listen, I have
it's fascinating.
My social life, not that I ever had one, but my social life is gone. I watch Netflix, I watch movies, trying to watch as many as I can, and I'm like 20 away from 25K, and I can't believe it.
What's a social life? What is a social life anyway?
What is a social life? Well, here's what I'm going to do, Austin. I'm going to drop your channel link in the chat on Get Vocal and also on the live feed on Facebook. If you are not a raving fan of this guy, there's something wrong with you because he's got humor. He knows what the heck he's talking about. And he's never steered me wrong whenever it comes to all of the movie goodness.
And he has an amazing genetic gene pool, thanks to me.
Let me tell you.
Oh my gosh. All right.
He's definitely worthy of a subscription.
Well, guys, are you ready to kick off episode 92?
Let's do it.
Hey guys, welcome to PopX, where science fiction meets pop culture. I'm your host, Joseph Burke, Central Florida's seasoned comic book nerd and retro enthusiast. Now, we'd like to welcome everyone joining us live on the PopX.live and Geeks.live chat room. Now, come hang out with us and join the conversation over at PopXcast.com. Now, if this is your first time tuning into PopX, let me give you a quick little rundown on how things are going to go. The first 20 to 25 minutes of the show, we'll be doing some what we call geek news headlines. It is the headlines that have been plastered all over the web for the past 2 weeks, and we get to talk about it. And then we're going to transition into the segment in the last 30 minutes of the show where we talk about Shazam. So if that is your first time, hey, welcome aboard. Keep rocking. Get your geek on. Austin Burke, what's new with you?
Yeah. I am Austin Burke, the Appalachian geek at heart. You guys, I want you to head over to Google Play or iTunes right now, or after the show, click that subscribe button, catch up on some amazing shows from our archive. And while you're there, we would appreciate you guys showing us some love by leaving us a 5-star rating and review. And if you missed last episode 91, where we talked about Captain Marvel and reviewed that glorious Marvel movie, check our official website at popxcast.com for this and other great past shows from PopX's collective archive of geek goodness.
Yes.
All right. And I am Lindsay Badger, your favorite geeky okie, back again to rock out on the Shazam movie. We're going to dive into some news first. So, Joe.
Well, indeed, I'm just so excited. Can you feel it? Can you feel it in the air tonight? Don't go nowhere. We'll be right back. PopX News is coming to you right now.
Extra, extra, read all about it. This is PopX News coming to you live right here on PopXcast.com.
All right, and it is PopX News time, so let's dive right into this, shall we? So we have Captain Marvel. Man, I get to share this one, has officially crossed the 1 billion mark at the box office. Now, Captain Marvel hit the ground running at the box office, and now Marvel Studios' first woman lead, led film, has soared past the $1 billion mark at the box office. Now, Brie Larson's superhero project sailed past $1 billion in the box office receipts in its fourth week in theaters, bringing it to $358 million domestically here in the United States and $645 million internationally through April the 2nd. Now, it isn't out of theaters just yet, so it'll probably be hanging out probably until Infinity War, Avengers, rather. So it'll likely pad a total of probably a lot more money as people are gearing up for it because they want to get that last Marvel fix before Endgame. And this will be Marvel's seventh addition to the top 10 superhero films of all time. Mind you, this is Disney's 21st overall addition to the $1 billion club. Now, when you add all of their animated and live-action projects together, well, let me just say, it's a lot of freaking money. So, yeah. Austin, what do you think about Brie Larson and Captain Marvel hitting the $1 billion mark?
Well, let me tell you, so Brie Larson had a movie come out on Netflix Friday, and in the comment section of that movie, people apparently still aren't over that controversy that happened because they're like, ah, Brie Larson's movies, they all flop, a bunch of flops. And I'm like, what are you talking about? Captain Marvel hit $1 billion. Wonder Woman, the most celebrated female superhero in history, got 800 million. Captain Marvel hit $1 billion. Now, she definitely had help because we're close to Endgame. But guys, you can't deny the success of this film. It is insane.
It's insane.
Yeah.
It is crazy. Yeah. Lindsay, what are your thoughts on the $1 billion?
I am so happy that it did well because there was a couple, it's not 100% perfect by any means, but it is a very well put together, enjoyable movie. And I feel that there was a lot of controversy leading up to it with, the whole Me Too movement and the feminist drive behind the politics that was kind of tied into having a woman superhero show. It just kind of standard operating procedure for that, unfortunately. But I don't feel like it deterred it success whatsoever. And I'm so glad that it overcame all of the negatives that were trying to bring it down.
Nice pull. Want to say a huge shout out right quick before we transition over to the next one there, Austin. Want to say hello to Leah. We got Brad, Luke. We got Herbie. We got Sean. What's up, Sean? Hey. Welcome to Get Vocal, my friend. And we got Sammy Klinger, and we got Dre, and all the amazing friends. And then all over on Facebook, too. All of you guys watching right there live on Facebook. What's going on, guys? Good to have you here with us.
And if you're over on Facebook watching and you're wondering how in the world are they getting all these people into two different places, there is a link pinned in the chat to come over here and join in as well if you want to. All is welcome wherever you view.
Yes.
Shall we dive into a little bit more news?
Please do so, Duns.
All right. Well, we're going to talk about a little bit of Walking Dead. Season 9 delivers the lowest rated finale in the series history. But if you ask the fans of The Walking Dead, most of them will tell you that the recently finished 9th season is one of the best in the show's history. The new showrunner, Angela Kang, has put a much bigger focus on character development and story and less on the general shock factor. It's been a wonderful return to form, and the majority of the fans have appreciated each and every episode. However, despite its overall spike in quality, The Walking Dead continues to struggle in its ratings. In fact, this Sunday's season 9 finale delivered the lowest ratings of any season ender thus far. According to the new report from Variety, The Walking Dead's finale on Sunday had a total of 5 million viewers tune in.
Gosh,
live,
that's nothing.
Earning just a 1.9 rating in the coveted 18 to 49 year old demographic.
Oof.
That's down 44% in the ratings from last season's finale, as well as 37% in the overall audience. While these numbers are troubling for a series that just 3 years ago saw 18 million people tune in for its finale, it's not all bad news. The Walking Dead has actually grown in its ratings over the past couple of weeks, and season 9's finale was up 20% from its penultimate episode, which delivered on the classic Pike scene from the comics. Also, despite the lower live numbers, The Walking Dead throughout the season, the show has seen big gains in its live plus three audience. So it's not all horrible.
It's not all horrible, but, I mean, but it's a little...
It's nine seasons, though.
All right, it's a little disheartening, though, because you come from Negan. When Negan killed all of those people with his bat, Lucille, I mean, that was like 18 million. But here's my trend. Here's my focus, and I think Austin Burke will agree with me. I think the industry is just done with zombies as all. I think that we're just... Okay.
Got burned out a little bit.
All right, we've saturated the market with zombies, and I think people are just okay. It's just another Walking Dead. It's all the same crap anyway. So, Austin, what do you think about it?
And my big issue is for so long Walking Dead, and I'm one of the people that fell off of the show just because it felt like every season was the same thing as the prior season, and nothing was really intriguing me. And now the Negan stuff, I did tune in for that just to kind of catch up and see what I was missing. That was great, but then even that started to get repetitive. Now, I have heard that this season is significantly better, but by the time you get to season nine, it's like, is it too late? And that's my thing. Is it too late to save this show? That's my question I ask you guys, because Walking Dead really is, even though its ratings are still solid, it's falling off big time.
I think, too, they suffered with the removal of Andrew Lincoln. I think with Rick Grimes out of the picture now, and you know, he's done 8.5 seasons. He did half of not season nine before.
That's a really good run.
And but he's actually committed to do three feature films for AMC with the character Rick Grimes. He's committed to doing three films, and it's going to tell the story of what happened to Rick and all of that. So I think with the culmination of everything we're seeing, I think it's just showing a trend in the media and the viewership today that people are just done. Maybe I don't want to say totally with Walking Dead, because there's still those diehards, but I think at the end of the day, I think it's just showing the proof of the saturation of the market. Everybody's just done with zombies and ready to move
and
on.
I've never been a watcher of The Walking Dead. I mean, obviously it's a very popular show, and I'm totally not on the bandwagon for all the popularity and whatnot. But I know that in general, for any show that gets hype and popularity, it's hard to make it to that decade of season.
Brad's comment, I'd rather watch PopX Cast.
I would rather watch PopX Cast too, Brad. But right. I mean, we may be a little biased.
Let's move on. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think that just to finish up here, that even if they don't get renewed for the 10th season or even the 11th season or whatever, what a fantastic run this show has gotten, and what an impact on culture in general it has had.
Yeah, I agree.
So they've already won.
They've won in our eyes. Well, we're transitioning from the world of the undead into the world of what just happened. James Gunn has officially been reinstated to finish Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. As fanboys and fangirls everywhere, including myself, and I'm sure Team PopX will feel me on the same way as well, James Gunn's dismissal from Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 enraged fans who supported the director. I mean, who's done a phenomenal job, and even some of the cast members have went on Twitter and official social media outlets to voice their concern. And after Gunn's departure, Zoe Saldana was one of the actors who advocated for Gunn's return. She and the rest of the Guardians of the Galaxy cast signed a public letter urging Disney to reconsider its choice. Now, Saldana told Entertainment Tonight that she is happy with Disney's decision to rehire Gunn for the upcoming sequel. I'm proud of him. I'm proud of what he's coming back. I'm proud of the fact he's coming back, said Saldana. And I'm also proud of Disney, actually, that all the leaders right now behind the big corporation decided to lead by example and spreading the word and the message of redemption is important. And redemption is important. Mm. So, with that, I think, honestly, we know that the script has been done for a while. We know that James Gunn solidified that script probably several months ago. Long before the holidays, I'm sure. And then he ended up, Disney, I don't know how it all transpired, but tweets from 2012, we talked about it previously on PopX Cast. And it was just kind of one of those unfortunate circumstances, and I think Disney is setting the example here by offering a second chance to a director to do this, and I think that's huge. Austin, what are your thoughts?
There are things that you can do and I'll throw out Kevin Spacey, that you can't come back from.
That's
you
pretty
just
bad.
Can't,
yeah.
Right? But then you do something like what James Gunn did, and while it was disgusting, and I don't condone that behavior, Disney did know about it when they hired him, regardless of what they're going to say to the public. Yeah. They knew about it. Okay, yeah. It's not like they. But when it came out and when people started learning about it, then Disney's, we got to fire this guy. You know what they realized? They realized that we're not getting Batista back because Batista was done at that point. This is his franchise. This is his baby. And to finalize this trilogy and to complete what he started with one and even two, which I didn't think two was as good as one, but I still think James Gunn, like, he is the perfect guy to take this on. They had no choice but to hire him back. Now, I don't believe they had no choice. I think they could have brought in like a Taika Waititi and he could have done a great job. But to make these actors happy, to bring this family back together, see, when the actors are in sync and when the actors are happy, the whole movie benefits from that. So yeah. I believe that this is the right move on Disney's part. Wow. And now we have a guy doing a Suicide Squad and Guardians of the Galaxy. That's pretty
at
cool.
What a crazy, cool. What a, you know, what's a double win for Gunn? It's it's a double win for James Gunn.
Dude, and his career is going to boom even bigger than it would have after this. So that's a win, man.
It's good that he's not being judged on simple mistake too. You know, it's just,
I was, when I heard about the firing of James Gunn, it was almost like the Spider-Man turning to dust for me. I was heart-wrenchingly heartbroken. I wanted to break down and cry because the Guardians franchise is like my favorite of all the Marvel-y things.
Yeah.
So I was like, this is not even going to be like even in the same ballpark of the same goodness if he's not the one doing this. So I was thrilled to hear to echo what Austin said. I do not condone or approve of the past behaviors, but again, he was hired, already done those.
We should have addressed it at
that time, and I'm so glad they retracted the firing and that we are moving forward with another glorious chapter in the Guardians of the Galaxy.
Well, we've got a long ground to cover here and a short time to get there, so let's keep this baby rolling here. Austin, what do you got for us?
All right, so we're talking Joe Russo thinks Avengers Endgame has Stan Lee's, as Stan Lee's final cameo. So Captain Marvel gave Stan Lee a bittersweet send-off during its opening minutes and granted him yet another memorable walk-on role before his passing last November. As painful as it is to think about, a lot of fans are still wondering where Lee will make his final appearance in a Marvel movie. Thanks to Anthony and Joe Russo via Sci-Fi Wire, we might finally have an answer. The brothers are currently promoting Avengers Endgame in India, and according to Joe Russo, the film closes the book on Stan the Man's visits to the universe he helped create. I believe that his final cameo is in Endgame. I don't remember if he was well enough to do a Spider-Man Far From Home cameo or not, said Russo. I grew up on these comic books. Stan Lee was an idol of mine when I was a kid. To be able to have the opportunity to not only work on material that he created, but to work with him, is a childhood dream come true. Now, I did hear earlier on about a month ago that Spider-Man Far From Home was his last cameo, but since then, this has kind of been retracted, and I do believe this is going to... And what a suiting thing for the kind of the last chapter of the MCU before they start a new one, this to be his final cameo. What do you guys think about this? I think it's awesome.
I think, honestly, it's a perfect culmination of bringing together 22 films spanned over a 10-year decade. You know, I think it's... It's a great way to kind of send off not only the movie, but the character and what Stan created. And he's just paying homage to him in that way. He was in every Marvel movie. And, you know, this culmination of 22 films, this will be his final cameo. Real life cameo. I mean, they may CGI him in future ones. I don't know what their plan is. But, it's really kind of like...
It's perfect into a perfect, an epic saga.
Yeah.
His life in general was an epic saga, so it's a perfect pairing.
I agree. All right, Lance, what you got for us?
Avengers Endgame ticket sales.
Yeah. Oh, what about those ticket sales? Did anybody hear this week? Who here got Avengers tickets?
Oh, baby, come on.
Did you get,
this girl.
All right. Anybody in the chat room? Well, anybody listening right now? Anybody? Did you get your Avengers tickets? Let us know in the comments.
Type of one in the chat if you got your tickets.
Type of one, yeah. So take a page out of Vicky Fitch's book.
All right. Well, while I'm reading, you guys can type your ones in the chat. All right. So Avengers Endgame ticket sales are already eclipsing Infinity War.
What?
In case you missed the news, early ticket sales for Avengers Endgame are officially underway, and they are going quick, super quick. Suggest that this could be the fastest selling Marvel Studios release to date.
Dang.
A report from CBR notes that the first ticket sales for Endgame are already setting records within its first hours alone. Adam, a site that's popular for online movie tickets reservations, said that the upcoming sequel has already topped their Infinity War sales. And it pointed out that it had received 3 times the ticket sales within the first hour.
Jesus.
Compared to the previous film. It even managed to outpace sales of Star Wars The Last Jedi, which was setting sales for last year. And as a result of the heavy traffic from avid moviegoers, some of the ticket sites even had to set up queues. Now, Joe, I remember you showing me this on your phone.
Yeah, I'll talk about that here in just a second.
Fandango and some of the had some fans waiting for over an hour for their spot to purchase Adam. And these were set up after sites temporarily crashed from all of the heavy user traffic. And on top of that, AMC Theater's website was completely shut down for the entire day on Tuesday due to the intense amount of traffic. It just couldn't handle it, you guys.
Jeez.
Moviegoers were painstakingly waiting for their turn to get back online around sometime around 4 p.m. Eastern on April 2nd. Now, I remember that I do Regal, and they were slow, but it was nowhere near as dramatic as this.
Well, usually right around 11:20 a.m., AMC website went completely offline due to extensive tracking. The traffic, wow. Their website and their processing servers to process payments and credit cards totally shut down. And the AMC website was completely offline. And if you went to it, it would have been on maintenance.amctheaters.com. Wow. And it was completely shut down. It was a black screen when you tried to load it. I had it on my Instagram feed all day. But luckily for me, you know, instead of deciding to go big and IMAX and crazy and competing with all that on the first weekend, I decided to go local here in my hometown where I live and then go see it opening night. And then I want to take my wife and I are going to go see it in either Adobe Digital or IMAX experience to some extent. But it was just crazy, though. If this many people are on board with Endgame, can you imagine just the hype, you know, leading up to days before and what everybody's going to be? I mean, I'm ready to it. I'm doing the Marvel Movie Marathon right now. So I'm on day 4 of the Marvel Movie Marathon. So.
Yes.
It's pretty awesome. So I'm excited, and I know everybody else out there is. So if you got your ticket, good. But I saw on eBay there was a pair of tickets that was on sale in New Jersey, and they were going – the pair of tickets went for $15,000 for opening night.
Whoa.
This is how crazy this has become.
Oh, man.
They sold – it was an IMAX experience event, and it was $15,000. You can Google it. You can find it. $15,000 ticket for Endgame, and you will find the information.
And here's the crazy thing, too. This is a 3-hour movie. Yeah. So this is less screenings than a normal film, but it's still selling this. We've never seen in my life.
I've never experienced anything. This really, it trumps the Star Wars bloom of the 80s when, you know, this is unreal, unheard of.
Yeah,
nothing.
And yeah, and I'm pretty darn excited to be a part of it. I'm just going to say that right now.
Me too.
All right, so moving along with from hijacked ticket sales into the Dark Phoenix of the X-Men franchise. After Dark Phoenix soars into theaters this summer in June, one of the longest cycles of the superhero movies will finally come to an end. Now that the X-Men are in the Marvel Studios' hands, now that the merger with Fox and Disney has been completed, the franchise will seemingly undergo a total reboot. After explaining that the decision was made before Disney's acquisition of Fox, director Simon Kinberg told comicbook.com that its intentions were always to conclude Fox's cycle of X-Men movies with the Dark Phoenix storyline. So they knew it was coming. They were creating one final X-Men film to wrap up over 10 or what was it, 1999 was the first X-Men film. So, wow. And Simon Kinberg went on to say, in quote, "From the beginning of conceiving what we were going to do with the film and writing it, which was 3+ years ago, so long before there was even a Disney merger, I felt like it was the actual culmination of his cycle of X-Men movies." Now, Kinberg said, "Because it's seeing this family that you've come to love and know for so many however films, and if you count the original almost 20 years now, you see that the family has tested in a whole new way. You see that the family start to fall apart in a real way for the first time, ultimately come back together." End quote, Simon Kinberg. So I will go see Dark Phoenix. I really don't have a lot of expectations for it, just given, you know, just where everything's at with it. I mean, Bryan Singer's not directing it again, so I guess. So what are your thoughts on Dark Phoenix? You think it's just going to be a...
From what I've been hearing, yeah, I don't want to... But they did go back and they did reshoot, so maybe the reshoots will magically save the film. Here's my thing about this movie. If it's good, I'm going to be so happy because I love this cast. I think this cast is perfectly suited to play these characters. The problem is Apocalypse was just like, you know, and they've had a few fall flat, and this is the last movie in this universe. What is there to get excited about? I mean, after this, it's over regardless. Even if it's a great film, that's awesome. It stands alone, but then it's like, it's over. So my anticipation is a lot lower than I want it to be. But if I walk out pleasantly surprised, then you're going to see a happy Austin. Otherwise, you're going to see a I don't care.
Queen takes Bishop. Checkmate.
they could possibly be going out with guns a-blazing, Austin.
Maybe Dark Phoenix. Maybe Dark Phoenix kills everyone.
Oh, I would love that.
Yeah,
I would
kill
love
it all.
It.
Just kill them all. Kill them all.
Kill every one of them.
Let God sort them out.
I'd be so happy with that. Get them, let God sort them.
No, I'm just joking. But you know, I think it's really interesting though that I'm glad that Fox Studios had the opportunity to do one last hurrah with the X-Men franchise. And I'm glad, you know, they didn't leave it like open-ended with all these actors and you know, James McAvoy and all of them. They got to come back and reprise the role one more time. And so I'm excited to see that.
Also, at the Disney presentation at CinemaCon, New Mutants was still on their release schedule.
I saw that.
So, what? Are they releasing it in theaters? I mean, I think so, because have we seen a trailer for that movie in a year? No. Where's the trailer? Where's the marketing? Who knows? But it's just an odd thing for me. If Disney is going to release it, they have some sort of confidence in it, because Disney is very, we want to release good movies. So
Hulu,
we'll see how that goes.
They're going on Hulu. What's going on Hulu? Wait and watch.
I 1,000% agree with you. I would, yeah.
60% Disney owns 60% stake in Hulu. You
let's
wait
bet,
watch.
Let's bet money, dude. Yeah. I guarantee it.
Straight to streaming.
You suck. Anyway, so Austin, give us the last news article of the night, and we'll go on into Shazam.
All right. So our final topic is Marvel reveals brand new X-Men character Major X, by Deadpool creator Rob Liefeld, one of my absolute faves. So nearly 30 years after bringing Cable to life in the pages of the New Mutants, speaking of the devil, artist Rob Liefeld is returning to Marvel Comics for the debut of brand new character who is set to take the X-Men franchise by storm. That's not a pun. Marvel just announced the new series Major X, featuring a mysterious new character who will collide with Wolverine, Deadpool, Storm, Cable, and other X-Men in a conflict that is set to rock the foundations of the X franchise. So Liefeld is writing the bi-monthly series as well as providing art for the first issue, while Image Comics co-founding partner Wiles?
Good luck with that one.
Portacio? That sounds right. And former Teen Titans artist Brent Peoples joins Marvel to helm issue number 2. Liefeld spoke to comicbook.com about the newest creation, revealing that some major details about the story's plot, like the fact that Major X will come from an unexplored area in the Marvel Universe. Major X comes from a realm, another plane, called the, this is the ultimate pun, Existence. It is populated by only mutants, Liefeld explained. It's their special place. Special place. I have that. They're happy. They're living in harmony. The events that caused this portal to open, and for this, the Existence to exist at all, are subjects we deal with and we answer. The absolute formation of the existence, Major X hails from there and his home. The reason he's here encountering the current modern-day Marvel mutant landscape is because the existence has been destroyed, and he is on a journey to
the
restore
existence.
His home. The idea for Major X actually stems back from an aborted project Liefeld admittedly was reluctant to pitch back in 1992. Now, Joe,
yes,
did I see Rob Liefeld retweet you on Twitter?
Rob Liefeld retweeted me on Twitter because I picked up his book and I took a picture of it in my man cave with Stan Lee above the wall.
Oh man!
And he's just like, I gotta retweet this, and so he did. But
not get a retweet.
So it was really cool. It was my little moment there. I was like, oh yay, Rob Liefeld, that's cool. Yeah, Deadpool, yay. All that. But so let me give you a little information about this, and then we'll move on. From what I've been told, and in Liefeld's interviews, Major X is going to be one of the guys that's going to literally destroy Deadpool. He is like he's like the Terminator of the X-Force.
That's cool.
And
man,
we find out. Spoiler alert! Spoiler alert! If you don't want to hear this, you might want to mute the next 10 seconds. His last name is Summers. We don't know if it's Cable. We don't know if it's Scott Summers, Cyclops. We don't know his origin.
It's somebody related. You know it.
Let's go.
Think about
man.
It. Think about
they
it.
They wouldn't use that name if it wasn't related.
His name is Summers, and he's from the future. So
that'd
here,
be a cool way to revamp Cyclops.
Really? Man. Yeah. So while we're on the vein of comics, I did want to share these two this week. This one came out. This is Batman Turns 80. This is Detective Comics number 1000. Issue 1000. And me being a Frank Miller fan, I had to go pick up the Frank Miller copy.
Oh, dude. Come on, man.
They had a cover for each decade, correct?
And they did. And just like they did for Superman. And last but not least, out of the comic shop this week as well, Marvel has launched a brand new series. It's called War of the Realms. Issue number one dropped this Wednesday night. Wednesday. And it's a 6-part series. And it's where all the realms of the multiverse of Marvel Comics come and fight.
Dude,
it's pretty awesome. Yeah,
let's go.
So let's do it. So, but if you're out there and you're an avid comic book reader and you've read Major X, leave a comment below. Let us know what you think about it. And are you happy to see Rob Liefeld return to Marvel just for this miniseries? And I know I am, and I'm really happy that he retweeted me. Thank you, Mr. Liefeld. But anyway.
Thanks,
man. So moving on with the show here, we are going to transition. We are at the halfway point of the show, and we're going to go into Shazam now. I'm going to roll the spoiler alert thing, so if you have not seen the movie Shazam, beyond this point, you have been warned.
Danger. You are about to enter a Pop-X spoiler alert. Beyond this point, there is no return. You have been warned.
Oh, yes. Looks like we have the Geek Culture Cast Network hanging out with us over on Facebook. What's up, guys?
Hey, guys.
It's good to see you all as well. Holy cow, we have that is really cool, man. We got so many people there hanging out with us on the feed. You guys are just
friends.
Awesome. But anyway, moving along here, I think, you know, being that Lindsay Badger is back, and being
she
that she's
off again this week?
She is. Well, you saw Shazam. You went and saw Shazam specifically. And so, what do you like about it? Let's talk about the likes first.
It was just a fun movie. And, okay, can we just start out saying that it's a DC movie?
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
And it's not a turd. Okay, can we just start it with this?
Yeah, we can do that.
It is not a turd.
We can do that.
It is a very fun, enjoyable movie. It's got, like, a... I don't say PG. It was what, PG-13, correct?
Mm-hmm.
So it's like if you took Deadpool and made him a kid and kind of took that same style of humor.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's not a lot of fourth wall breaking like he does, but it's that same kind of humor that, you know, he takes serious moments and interjects it with humor. And you're like, well, that's just hilarious. I caught myself like belly laughing.
There was some big
times,
moments in that movie.
The very end scene at the lunchroom table.
Oh,
at the very end.
We're going to get to that here in a minute. Yeah.
Oh,
I literally laughed out loud.
It was good.
It was like, I could hear it over the loud music and everything.
Yeah.
It's like, oh my gosh, that was so good. Okay, so to break down a couple of things, some good things, some bad things. I found a lot of thinking about it earlier today, I could relate it to a lot of different movies already in existence, not necessarily superhero movies. Like, for example, remember when he was learning all of his powers and he and his friend were doing the videos on YouTube and uploading it and he was kind of becoming viral?
Yeah.
Does that not sound something familiar to another Disney movie called Wreck-It Ralph 2?
I didn't even make that connection, but you're right.
Yeah, they totally pulled that from the
Wreck-It Ralph stuff.
But I liked it. I mean, it kind of like fast forwards through the popularity, and I get that. But it's just like, dang, Disney, you almost like straight up stole that from yourself.
You think sometimes they troll their own franchises?
They did, yeah.
I think
okay,
do.
And then another blockbuster movie that one of the scenes reminded me of is the statues, the Seven Sin statues with the red eyes in their gargoyle form. Is that not a Ghostbusters?
With kind the gargoyle? Kind of. Yeah, I see that. Ghostbusters
totally
1.
Feel. And then Gluttony looks just like Slimer that's not green.
Yeah, I like that.
So I was just like, okay, are we gonna start seeing the Ghostbusters show up any moment? And then the wedgies, the flying wedgie sort of situation with the bullies and the truck and the whole situation there, it was not an exact pull, but I kind of had a feeling of like the Neverending Story at the very end where Falcor's coming to chase the bullies down the street. Those were some pulls for me that I was just like, I'm remembering some of these, but they're iconic scenes that they didn't blatantly copy, but it has those same feels, which I really thoroughly enjoyed.
Yeah.
I thoroughly enjoyed that part. The part where they were developing the characters, kind of, I guess people could think it was maybe a little bit slow to build those, but I felt that it was necessary to really invest yourself emotionally into Billy's background, because up front, he looks like a troublemaker, but really, he's just on a mission to find his mom.
And
is kind of misunderstood. And I mean, even if I was a kid in that same situation, I don't think I would do anything differently.
Yeah.
I was kind of really mad as a mom through that whole lost kid scene. I was really sad. I almost started crying. I was like, you guys, it's only 3-year-old. And like, he's so cute. You know, so I was getting a little bit of, you know, mad and sad feelings along with all of the laughter. So there was a good range of emotion there. The foster family. Oh, my goodness. That is parent goals. Right there. That is parent goals. Not only the couple, you know, they had also gone through the system, so they know how he was going through, so it was relatable. They weren't like always up in his business, even though they were still showing signs of concern, which I really thoroughly appreciate. And then all of the siblings, they really acted like they were all related to each other, and it was so sweet.
Yeah.
You know, the older one getting into college and being successful. And the little girl, to me was like,
oh, Darla.
She was awesome.
Yes, she was like the acceptance meter for this movie.
She's my favorite.
So at the beginning, he wanted nothing to do with her whatsoever. She was like a nuisance and really annoying, and she couldn't figure out why he was behaving that way. And then towards the end, they were like best friends.
Their family.
So I loved how that relationship, and that was like the sign that he had decided to be a part of this family and to call it his home. And it was such a heartfelt little thing to build that up along with all of the silliness that was ensuing.
Let me share too, to tag on with Lindsay here, and something that really just hit me resoundingly as someone who was heavily bullied in high school myself. How they address bullying in this movie was just so beautiful. It was so great because, you know, we all know that Billy's cohort, his friend, you know, he has a handicap, he has a disability, and you know, he just there's this one scene where he's crying out to Billy, "I would give anything to have what you have. I want to walk one day and not have to use this thing. I want to, you know." And I'm just like sitting there like, okay, hold it in, don't go, don't give in. I could just get chill bumps right now just thinking about it. So I was just sitting there for a moment. I was just like, oh my God, that was such a powerful scene. And then right at the end of it, when he realizes that there's seven seats that he can fill in his army, and he's like, you know, say my name. And then the boy who had the disability became a superhero. Oh my God, he got to be Shazam.
So great.
And it was so awesome. So hey, what's up, Dr. Scott? Thank you so much for hanging out with us, man. It's good to see you. Is it D. Scott or Dr. Scott? I call him Doctor. It's good. But,
Doc Scott.
Yeah. But I think go ahead.
Go ahead and finish your thought, and then I want to.
No, I just think what I think really how they tackled just not only the bullying side of it, but a child today who's grown in a mixed family who doesn't have that stable father or mother figure. And that's a lot more households than you would want to think or know about.
Yeah.
It was really good because finally we have a hero where that population is spoken into.
Yep. Right.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
So
I think that's
and I think that they nailed it, you know.
Yeah. And how believable was Zachary Levi?
He's awesome.
An actual 14-year-old. He nailed
He's
it.
He's awesome, dude.
Yeah. He nailed it. I never really questioned the transition between adult and childhood form.
Mm-hmm.
He was consistent with his counterpart as sharing a character role. That is difficult to do, I can only imagine.
Mm-hmm.
To get down on the same level and to be so in sync with your partner that's playing the same character in the thought processes and the behaviors and the mannerisms and everything. Incredible job on Zachary Levi's part.
I agree.
Absolutely, 100%. But there was one question I wanted to give you guys to kind of wrap up on my little bits of the movie. Now, when they open the movie and they kind of introduce the villain, which I felt they spent a little extra time on, which is okay, I suppose, mm-hmm. but they could have shortened it a bit. The main wizard guy in the lair, the where the seats were all at in the hall, said that the villain was not pure of heart, so he was not worthy of taking on his powers. Now, and then we see that he's desperate, I suppose, to find somebody, anybody to come take this before he dies. Is this the whole reason why Billy gets it? Because he's obviously not pure of heart, because he's behaving like any kid would be to go out and, you know, exploit the powers and all of that sort of thing, kind of showing that he's not necessarily what you would consider.
Can I tackle that one?
Person. Yes.
I think they literally just took a page right out of a biblical context. And if any time, I'm going to use a couple of illustrations here. So many times, with the seven deadly sins, right off the bat, biblical connotation. But in if you've ever read anything, and I'm not getting into a religious debate or anything like that. I'm just using it in terms of a talking point. If you look in the Bible, many times God used people who had a lot of issues. They were jacked up themselves. So you think about Moses, who had a speech impediment, or David, who had all the flaws that he had, but yet God used an imperfect person to do a perfect job. And I think that's why the wizard chose Billy. Billy was imperfect, but his heart was pure, was in the right place.
Okay.
And I think choosing someone that was not perfect, but had the perfect heart and the perfect strive, and even though he didn't get it at the first, he got it towards the end, he understood. And I think
I just know there was like, what, 20, 30 years time span between the bad guy interacting with the wizard and Billy interacting with the wizard. And I was like, dang, is he just desperate to drop it on somebody so that he can finally move?
No, I don't think he was. I don't think he was desperate. I think that he was just looking for the one that could carry it out.
Makes sense.
So
makes sense.
Austin, I want to hear from you, sir. What are your thoughts, your pros, cons, likes, dislikes, all that?
Well, you know, this movie's an interesting story to me because I saw the first trailer and I'm like, you know, I don't know if it's going to work. And then I saw the second trailer and I liked it significantly more. And I was genuinely excited to see what Zachary Levi could do with this character. And I walked out significantly having had a wonderful time in the theater. And the more I thought about this movie, the more I liked this movie. We talked about the message and what it sends to, you know, the kids that are maybe going through the same thing and how they don't have a superhero movie like this. Listen, if I would have grown up with Shazam at that age, this would be my favorite superhero movie of all time. But for someone who is in an orphanage and someone who is going through something with a disability or even somebody's going through a hard time, being bullied, that kind of thing, I think this movie really speaks to that audience, but it also speaks to the adult audience. I liken it to a Pixar film. And I've never compared a superhero movie to a Pixar film before.
That's a really good one, though.
And it's odd, but it balances tone and humor between the adult audience and the kid audience perfectly.
It does.
And we don't have another superhero movie like that. You mentioned Deadpool, Lindsay. It is a very Deadpool-esque film, but this is what Deadpool would be if it was directed towards kids and if it did not break the fourth wall. That is what Shazam is. And it's so odd because I'm comparing it to Deadpool, but I also feel like this is the Ant-Man of the DC universe, as in I watched Ant-Man and I had a great time watching it. That character is memorable. He's funny, he's wacky, he's zany. It really is a family movie because you have the father and daughter relationship. Mm-hmm. And it's a very different kind of relationship in this film, but you have the perfectly cast parents of the orphanage. That entire group of kids, I thought, killed it, as did their adult counterparts who were, oh, fun fact, and I know we'll probably get into that, but I love the casting of their adult counterparts when they turn into adults, because that's actually the cast of George Miller's Justice League that got canceled a few years back. So they brought those guys.
Yep.
Yeah, I thought that was wonderful casting. And then we talk about Asher Angel and Zachary Levi combining to make one character in Shazam. It's perfect. Mm-hmm. It's perfect. And I had an issue with the padding during the trailers. I'm like, it looks like he's... And then I saw a picture of Zachary Levi in the gym. I'm like, all right, he is big. But there's just a little bit of padding in that suit. But for what the character is, it worked so well. Mm-hmm. And it looked so good through the movie. And I love the... It is a practical effect. This was, I guess, slightly CGI'd. But the lightning bolt where it glowed, they actually did that on set. And I think that makes all the difference in the world. And you can also tell... where the director, David F. Sandberg, he has a horror background. He's never really tackled a family or a superhero movie before. He implemented those elements with the gargoyles and the seven deadly sins. And, you know, you're watching this family movie, and he's Dr. Savannah's chucking people out the window. I'm like, all right, this got dark quick. But for some reason, it did. It got, like, super, like, over-the-top. But for some reason, I think back on that moment, and I'm like, it's a good, not tone breaker, but it's a good kind of shift away from all of the good stuff. And it says, hey, this is a villain you have to watch out for. This is not just some guy who's going to, oh, he's going to fight Shazam at the end. It's going to be a cute little battle. No, he's out to get people. Mm-hmm. And I like that. Even though I think he's not the most
dad.
Exactly. Not just his dad and his brother. He just chucked out the window. And, you know, he's not the most memorable villain in the world, but they fleshed him out more than they needed to at the beginning. And I do agree. I think that was a tad bit long, but they did try, and I appreciate that. But two, he got something more than I think we get in most of the big giant CGI villains, say the one from Suicide Squad, right? That no fleshing out to that villain whatsoever. I don't even
know his name. He just appeared.
No, some shiny thing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I remember his name, Dr. Savannah, not Big Shiny Thing. So I like what they did with the villain. I like what they did with the character. And overall, guys, I think Shazam was a really a freaking great time in the theater. And I want to go see it again. And I can't wait to see it again. I'll probably see it two or three more times in the theater. And I really enjoyed myself. I truly did.
You know, you had hit on something there, too, with the expanse of all of the foster kids that were in the house, how Billy was able to transfer his power to make the entire tribe of his brothers and sisters into the Shazam family.
What a message.
That is straight out of the comics, let me tell you that.
Yeah.
Because it's not the first time that Shazam has said, you know, touch the staff and say my name. And then everybody just transforms. And you've got this legion of people that embody the power of Shazam coming at you.
That's awesome.
It's not going to be a good day for anybody. And so, you know, there's power in one, but there's more power in seven. But here's something
that's really cool is that each of them got their own individual special powers.
Oh, yes.
So not every single one of them was exactly the same, which I thought was kind of cool.
Now, did you guys pick up on the fact that there was six orphans, six foster kids, right? But seven seats. Now,
who's the seventh?
Well, we already know who the seventh is. If you do your homework, it's Black Adam.
Dude, if The Rock would come on set and do the movie, like, when are we getting that?
So here's the thing. If you remember when the wizard was talking at the beginning of the film, we chose one and we chose him poorly.
Mm-hmm.
He did not embody what we were. That is Black Adam.
And here's what bothers me, though, is they've already confirmed. They're like, no, he's not going to be in the sequel. I'm like, are you doing? And I get it. They want to have his own movie first, and I guess meet up in the third movie of the Shazam franchise. But it's like and they set up a villain at the end. But I want Dwayne Johnson versus Zachary Levi. That's what I want. And I don't know. I can't wait that long.
Yeah, it's untelling what Warner Brothers is going to be doing with their franchises. I mean, they do have a couple of good hits. They had Aquaman, now they got Shazam, and they're both really good hits. Shazam, I think, dropped today. It was $54 million at the box office.
It's not bad, man.
It's not bad. Not bad for opening weekend.
For the kind of movie that it is, you know, I wanted more. I wanted $100 million for sure, but I do think word of mouth is going to keep it up there.
Indeed.
Here's the thing, though. Just from my own personal experience, Shazam was never really on my radar. Because there's not a general public knowledge of what this character is or what it's all about. So you just kind of have to take a chance on that movie ticket and go experience it or go watch a YouTube
video. Or you can just like hang out with Pop X Cast and see our review and be like.
Actually, Joe, the only reason why I went is because you encouraged me to do so. Otherwise, I wouldn't even have done it.
And are you glad you went to see it?
I am glad. Because my husband wasn't even interested in seeing it, and he still hasn't seen it. I went by myself to the movie theater. It was the most glorious 2 hours of mom time I have ever had, probably.
Yes. Yes.
Lindsay awesome. Badger just dropped
I
the mom.
I have no regret whatsoever about that.
She's like,
at all.
Screw
so
you.
Even if you're questioning
you watch the kids.
You think it's
I'm going to the
not,
theater.
Go watch the movie.
Go watch
buy
it.
The tickets.
Yeah.
Go watch the movie.
Well,
that's a great point you guys bring up, though. Aquaman had the benefit of being in Justice League, right? So we've already seen that character. Therefore, he made $1 billion. We've never seen this character before. So
Even before that, he's popularized as being a part of the Justice League in the cartoons and the comics. And he's an A-lister superhero, even though he had a bad rap of laying on dolphins and whatnot. People still knew about him and what
Laying
he did,
dolphins.
At least on a very minimal level. Shazam, there is nothing out there now except for this movie. And there needs to be more of him because I've been doing my own research on his background. And what a fun, goofy, magical series that I think I could fall head over heels in love with. I just need to learn more.
Yeah.
I need to learn
Agreed.
More about this guy.
Austin, you got any closing things for you as we're wrapping things up?
No, that's... for me, I was so impressed with this film. It's my favorite superhero movie of the year, in my top five, I believe, of the year out of 65 movies that I've seen. So I think it's a
65 movies since January the 1st.
I have a problem.
Oh, wow. Right, that's insane.
Dude.
That's insane. No, here's what we're going to do now. We're going to go ahead and review this the movie, and then we're going to roll into some Easter eggs because we have some really cool little nuggets that we're going to share with you guys. And so we'll go with ladies first, and then me and Austin, I'll wrap it up, and then Austin will give the final verdict on his. So from 1 to 10, you can use a 0.3, 0.5, 0.6, whatever. What would be your score, Lindsay Badger?
I think I'm going to give it a... I'll give it a 92.
92?
Ooh.
All right.
Or a 9.2.
Yeah, 9.2. I'm going to go with this is the first thing I heard in my head when I came out of the theater because I was really happy with what I saw. It was an 8.9.
Oh, I like that score.
Wonderful. These are good.
I'm very. You guys know how strict I am on my scores now. I don't hand these out often, but I'm going 8.2.
Nice.
Really good.
Hey, that's really good
superhero movie. I think it's one of the highest scores I've given in the DCEU so far. So let's keep this trend up.
8.2.
I think we can average that as a B+. That's definitely a go watch it.
Yes.
Well, even an A-. I think it's an A-, honestly.
Yeah, okay. I do too.
Yeah. I think it, so we got 9.2, 8.9, 8.2. So that's pretty freaking awesome.
Sean's going with a 9.6.
Sean Hockney is going with a 9.6. Good going, Sean. You look at that, Sean. You made Pop X on episode 92.
Yeah.
All right, so let's give some quick Easter eggs here. We'll roll with this, and we're going to share this, and then we're going to wrap things up. But these will go pretty quick here. So the first one we have is straight off the bat. It might just occur to you that there is something very familiar about the actor playing Thaddeus Savanna's terrible father. Now, we know he's the guy that was in the wheelchair in The Office and all that. His name is actually John Glover, best known for another DC project, Smallville. In which he played Lionel Luthor, terrible father of Mr. Lex Luthor. Now, and it doesn't stop there, he also played the B-list supervillain Dr. Jason Woodrue in Batman and Robin and voiced the Riddler in several of the 90s animated classics Batman.
I knew that guy looked familiar.
Yes. So, Lindsay, what's the next one we got?
When the first trailer arrived for Shazam at Comic-Con, its adolescent trapped in an adult body plot immediately drew comparisons to Tom Hanks' 1988 classic Big.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, me too. That was the first thing I went to. The filmmakers gave a subtle nod to the influences in a scene which Shazam enters a toy store in an attempt to escape Savannah. And at one point, they find themselves facing off across a giant piano in recreation of the famous Big scene.
I knew that. I did pull that. I caught that one immediately. I was like, oh my God, I was just waiting for dun 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 dun.
Keenan gives the movie an 8.2.
Keenan gives the movie an 8.2. Way to go, Keenan. Thanks, man. Nice. All right, Austin, what else you got for us?
All right, well, that's not the only nod to a big Hollywood film. The scene in which Savannah unleashes the seven deadly sins in his father's boardroom seems to reference a classic moment from Independence Day, so the receptionist waiting outside the room is confused. When the glass is clouded by a strange mist, he approaches the doors only to receive a surprise hand and the body going up against the door.
Do you remember that?
I love that. Yes.
Do you remember that scene in Independence Day, though, when you got when you got the guy, the scientist on the other end, and the alien is speaking through him? That was a nice little pull.
I recognized that scene with the glass in the office, but I was just like,
where have I seen
where that? It came from. I was like, it's so familiar. This movie is packed full of little things like this.
Yeah, so, I know. So let's see here. Let's keep on rolling here. When Billy and his siblings, Austin, have you read one yet?
I can't remember. Yes, I just did.
Okay. All right, here we go.
You just did that one.
So when Billy and his siblings attempt to flee Savannah in the Rock of Eternity, they stumble across a series of doors that open some decidedly dangerous places. Now, one reveals a group of crocodile-headed men playing poker. What was that all about, Team Pop-X? Shazam has a long history with crocodile men, whom he fought early on in his career. In more recent years, a similar character called Sobek befriended the Shazam-related character Osiris before eventually revealing that he was evil and devouring his pal. Oh, so there are some crazy nods from the Shazam history included in this film.
There's a lot of original Shazam comic references that I actually watched a video about. It's very interesting. Should check it out. All right, but another one is tigers. I don't know. Did you guys pick up on all the tiger reoccurrences? I totally picked up on these. The tigers are a reoccurring motif in the motif in the movie. Billy's backpack had a picture of a tiger on it, which was his original backpack from when he was like 3 years old, by the way. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you guys watched. Check that out. And also, the stuffed tigers were seen several times at the carnival. This is a clear reference to the comics. Talkie Tawny, a dapper gentleman who is also happens to be a tiger. Unlike the crocodile equivalents, the humanoid tiger is friendly, and although he can be a fearsome fighter too when he needs to be. So that's kind of cool.
Another character,
all of the comic characters.
They're paying homage to all the characters that's in Shazam. They're trying their best to just give nods to everything, so I think that's really cool.
All right, moving on. So Billy's new school is called Fawcett Central, a reference to Fawcett Comics, the original publisher of the Shazam comics. Well, technically, back then, the Captain Marvel comics. Fawcett was eventually forced to cease publication after losing a lawsuit to DC Comics, who claimed that the character was a Superman knockoff. Eventually, DC bought the rights to the character from Fawcett. So that, I didn't know about that. That's a very interesting Easter egg.
Yeah. And so, you know, there was also too a lawsuit between DC and Marvel back in the 60s because Marvel revealed their version of Captain Marvel. And at the time, DC had Captain Marvel. And so Marvel was suing DC for the rights. And that's DC. This was so crazy. DC gave up the battle in court and gave the name Captain Marvel to Marvel Comics and renamed him to Shazam. They just gave it up. They didn't even fight for it. Really strange. So
maybe they didn't have the financials to fight that big of a battle.
Possibly. I mean, I don't know. You know, in the 60s, I mean, I don't think a lot was going on with comics in the 60s anyway. All right, so moving on. The Wizard narrates an animated history of a previous wielder of the power Shazam. Ooh, we just talked about this. Long ago, we chose a champion, and we chose recklessly, he says, explaining that their top pick was corrupted by the seven deadly sins and nearly destroyed the world. This is surely a reference to Black Adam, the evil or sometimes anti-heroic former Shazam, an ancient Egyptian who in the comics used his powers not for justice but to conquer and dominate. Now, it is said that Dwayne Johnson is set to play him somewhere down the line. It might be a Black Adam reference, director David F. Sandberg tells Digital Spy, with producer Peter Safran adding, you could read it that way if you really dug into it. So, yeah, nice.
That's pretty cool.
Nice.
What we got?
Well, here's another one for you. One of the many, many names that Freddie suggests for Shazam is Red Cyclone. Oh, my gosh. How many names were there? Did you guys add those up? For the Red Cyclone is an apparent nod to multiple DC comic heroes called the Red Tornado.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. The best known version of the character is an android with air elemental powers. But the original version was the 1940s comedy superhero
Mahunkle.
Bless you. A working mother who fought crime wearing a saucepan on her head. Are you serious?
I'm not lying.
Oh, my goodness. Years later, her super-powered granddaughter, Maxine Hunkle, would go by the titles of Red Tornado and Cyclone. That is absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah. So, does that mean we get to nickname Lindsay Badger Mahunkle?
Is that my uncle?
Is that my uncle? No. She needs a saucepan on her. I'm telling you, she needs.
Sounds like a moonshine company.
She needs a saucepan on her head right now. Just saying.
Oh my god!
All right, Burke, you get the last one.
The final Easter egg we have today, another musical instrument themed Easter egg. Near the Rock of Eternity can be seen a burning fiddle, an apparent reference to a story in the 1946 comic Captain Marvel Adventures number 64. It centers around Ogar, another ancient corrupted pupil of the wizard. He enchants the violin of his henchman, Nero, to spew fire, and it almost burns down New York City. How's everyone on their classical references? That these characters are insane, and I love it.
I do. It's
so wacky.
It almost as if Howard the Duck would live in this universe.
He totally would fit in.
He would fit in.
Probably be sitting around the poker table with the gators and the tigers.
I'd love it. Bring it on.
Oh, that's another movie reference that it struck me, and I forgot to mention it. All the Doors. In the Rock of Eternity was totally
Monsters Incorporated.
A Monsters Inc. reference.
Monster Incorporated.
Oh yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
And
same thing. Yes.
Before we wrap things up, let's talk about the Superman reference.
Oh yeah.
We're in the spoiler part of the show, but when they're at the final scene of the movie is they're at the lunchroom and he's still waiting on Shazam to show up. And all of a sudden, Shazam shows up with his tray table, and he's like, oh, and I brought someone else with me. Now, we don't get the full head shot. We get a neck shot because we don't know what Henry Cavill's doing.
It's more
in
like
terms
a shoulder
of,
shot.
Yeah, it's like a shoulder shot. But it was the Man of Steel suit.
Yes.
It was.
Yes.
So
here's what happened. Henry Cavill actually, and I don't know if it may not have been this scene, but he filmed a scene. He was on set in a big black trench coat. So whether that was his scene or not, the fact that they're not showing his head kind of confirms to me that, and they've already pretty much confirmed it, but yeah, he is gone, which really, really stinks. But it still says to me, hey, we're in this universe. Even though this is a standalone movie, we're still referencing Batman and Wonder Woman and Superman. So I loved the scene, but I'm like, give me his head, man.
Yeah.
I just want to see his head.
Well, there was a lot of drops with like Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman. And even if you stayed right at the end of the credits, there was an Aquaman reference. And we saw that he was wearing the Aquaman shirt with the Aquaman logo, and he's sitting there trying to speak to a fish through a fishbowl.
Really, 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 really quickly, the animated sequence of credits before the cutscene. Did you guys? How incredibly cool was that?
Oh yeah,
the art that was done and the music and everything—it was the coolest thing I had seen.
It was
well
polished.
In a long time.
It was a well polished movie.
Very, very cool.
Even they spent some time even on the credits. You know.
Yes.
So that's pretty
cool. It was like flipbook style animation.
Oh, yeah, it was awesome. Yeah. It was great.
I agree. I completely agree.
Well, guys, we're going to wrap things up. That's it for episode 92, Shazam Film Review and More. We hope you guys enjoyed this episode, and it's so great to have Lindsay Badger back this week as she got to go see the movie and was able to attend and be on the show this week. So we're really, really grateful and blessed to have her here. And Austin Burke, you can catch him out. Just get on YouTube and go and type in Austin Burke. And he's help him get the 25K. Subscribe. Come on. Subscribe.
I did.
It didn't hurt. Yeah. It didn't hurt at all. It's like a flu vaccine. It stings
right
a
little, there in the chat again.
It stings a little bit, but yeah. All right, Austin, wrap things up. Let's get her going.
All right, you guys can find me on YouTube at Austin Burke, almost 25K. My wife's going to treat me to a Red Lobster dinner, so I want to get there. very excited for that. And you can find me on Twitter at The Burkinator. We are also part of an amazing network called the Gunna Geek Network. For all things even more geeky, head over to GunnaGeek.com and check out some amazing podcasts on our home network. Connect with us on social media. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, Tumblr, Twitter, and Pinterest, all at PopXCast. Send comments and suggestions to us via email at popxcast@gmail.com. Also, for future and past shows, you can visit official website of PopXCast at www.popxcast.com.
Thank you, bro. So well. Man, that was impressive.
Well, and if you're wondering who I am, if you forgot, I am Lindsay Badger, a.k.a. Badges on the internets. You can find me at LR Badger on all the social happy places, pretty much everywhere you look.
Indeed. And so I am Joseph Burke at Joseph Burke Arts all over the web. You can find me just J-O-S-E-P-H-B-U-R-K-E-A-R-T-S. And of course, hats off always is to the amazing Team PopX, who just goes above and beyond each and every week just to be totally boom sauce. You guys are just awesome. And I want to say that be sure to join us back here in a 2 weeks time as we do the official Avengers Endgame film review and more. Episode 93 right here only on GetVocal.com. And I want to give a huge shout-out right quick to Alexander Riesenkopf, Gisela Walter, and Lokesh for all the amazing programming and love and talents that they do here on GetVocal.
We love our GetVocal.
And hosting the PopX cast right here on GetVocal.com. If you are into social media streaming, come on over to GETVOKL.com. Register, sign up, and get yourself broadcasting ASAP, okay? All right, so we are about ready to sign off here. Lawson, any last words? You want to go see Hellboy this week?
I'm not excited for that movie, but I hope it's good. I really do, and I'm gonna go see it at some point in my life.
I got my ticket for Hellboy. I'm a little cautious and apprehensive about it, but I'm going in with a clear conscience.
I hope it's good.
It looks like it might be okay.
I like David Harbour a lot.
So. Yeah. All right, so take care. We'll see you next time right here on PopX Cast. Bye. Bye. From everyone at PopX Cast, thanks for listening. Please make sure to like our Facebook page, facebook.com/PopXCast, and click the follow button to get our live stream notifications. Drop us an email, popxcast@gmail.com. Be sure to check out this and more great content on the Gunna Geek Network at gunnageek.com. Get your geek on!